us a song, you're the piano man. Sing us a song tonight. Well, we're all in the mood for a melody, and you've got us feeling all right.
VIP Conduit presents VIP of the Month Spotlight with Teresa Rose.
Welcome everyone to VIP Spotlight of the Month of September. And we are very proud to announce that the VIP of the month is our own Grandpa Ned Benton. Good evening, Mr. Ned. How are you this evening?
Good evening, Teresa. I usually like to say, if I got any better, I couldn't stand it.
I hear you, and that's a good way to feel. Welcome, everyone, and hope you enjoy the interview tonight. I am looking forward to learning all about Ned Benton, as some of you are as well. I know some of you have probably known Ned for many, many years, but I understand that he is a very has a lot of interest, and we're going to learn a lot about him tonight. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Ned Benton. He was born December the 18th, 1939, and he lives in, I'm going to get this wrong. He lives in Lawrenceville, Georgia. Welcome, Ned.
Thank you, Teresa. I do live in Lawrenceville now. I was born in Thomasville, southwest Georgia, and Lawrenceville is sort of northeast Georgia, so opposites. But anyway, thank you for having me tonight.
All right, Ned, we're going to get started. Ned, tell us a little bit about where you were born and raised and a little bit about your family.
Well, I was born in Thomasville, Georgia. And I wanted to say at the age of four, just to be funny. But anyway, I was born in Thomasville and lived there most of my life, although I didn't live there most of my life because I went away to school when I was six. But my family, there were five of us. I had an older brother and three younger sisters. I still have the three younger sisters. My older brother died in 99. But we were on the farm when I was small, and then my daddy worked in the Georgia Packing Company, which later became Sunnyland. And that pretty much tells you about the family.
And then what is Sunnyland? I'm not familiar with that.
Sunnyland was a meat packing company. You used to go to the store and you'd buy Sunnyland bacon and ham and pork roast and all that stuff. But it was Sunnyland. And some years back now, Swift bought it out.
Okay, I'm familiar with the brand Swift, but I've never heard the brand Sunnyland. And since you lived on a farm, did you have farm animals? Did your parents raise a crop?
Oh, yeah, we worked when I was four. Well, my mom and dad were born on the farm and were taken out of school in the fourth grade, both of them, to work in the fields. So that was the education they had. But we lived on the farm for 3 years. My daddy farmed. He did what we call sharecropping. He was hired by somebody to work the farm for them, and it wasn't always a happy experience. But it was a joyful life. We were outside. We were free. We could kind of roam the country and the woods And of course, we were a close-knit family because we didn't have anything or anybody else.
Well, being from the South, sharecrop, was it cotton, tobacco, soybeans, corn, one of those types of crops?
Oh, yes. We did cotton and tobacco and peanuts. We didn't know anything about Jimmy Carter, but we knew peanuts. I remember when I was very small, I must have been 5 years old, my daddy took me and my brother with him to a tobacco auction, and we had to take our tobacco that was packed up and put up in, I don't know, it was wrapped up in these bales or whatever, And we took them and put them out there, and they would take them and auction them off. And we were in that place, and that was 1944, something like that. And we had a lot of German prisoners of war here then, and they were on all kind of jobs. And they were there, and my brother and I were kind of scared of them when we heard them talking, because it was, you know, we couldn't understand. And one of the guys came over and picked me up and set me over on another stack of tobacco and kind of scared me, but I was okay.
Well, I guess that would be hearing another language. And wow, you can say you were picked up by a prisoner of war, Germany prisoner of war. How? That's pretty awesome. All right, now tell us, were you born blind or did you go blind later in life?
No, I was not born blind. I could see until I was 5. I like 2 months being 6 years old. And I used to tell people only that I had an infection in my eyes that caused my blindness. But today I can tell people that it was gonorrhea that caused my blindness. My uncle, my mother's brother, brought it into the home and hid his medicine in the smokehouse and threw rags around that he had used. And my three-year-old sister picked up one of those rags and wiped herself with it, and that started it in the home. And my other two sisters, who were 2 and 10 months, also got it. And then I was in my 6th week of school, and I jumped up one morning and ran into a room there where there was a dishpan full of water sitting on a stand and a wash rag in it. And I grabbed it and washed my face because I was in a hurry to get ready to catch the bus to go to school. And it was where my mother had washed their faces. Now, with that infection in the eyes, we had so much gunk in the eyes, you know, that would just stick it together and stuff. And the doctor had given them drops to put in the eyes, and then Mama was having to wash their faces. And 2 and 10 months, she had her hands full and just turned away a moment. And an energetic 5-year-old ran in and took over. So, but I don't know if it was that same day or not, but all I remember is that in the afternoon when we got ready to come home from school, my brother had to help me get on and off the bus because my eyes were so swollen I couldn't open them. And then by that night, it got so bad I couldn't even open my eyes to see. I was scared and went to bed and covered my head. And the doctor said that I just had so much worse case than my sisters because I ran high fevers, and that really just gave life to the germ. So I wound up losing my right eye. They had to remove it. And the left eye then had the cornea was scarred over, and they had to that was it. They took the right eye out, and then I just had to clear up the infection in the left eye. And after it cleared up, I could see to get around some, but I looked off to the side because I could see out of the left corner of the cornea, a little spot that wasn't covered. And so I went around with my head at a right angle all the time.
Wow, that's a terrible way to lose your eyesight. I bet it was very scary for you at the time.
Actually, I don't remember being scared at all. I don't remember noticing a whole lot of difference. My brother was 2.5 years older, and my sisters are like 2.5, 3.5, and 4.5 years younger. And I just continued to do what they did. And, you know, I was really blessed to have a family that didn't treat me any different. And my mother expected me to do as the other children did and taught me accordingly. And a lot of people think she was cruel to teach me at 5 and 6 years old to peel potatoes with a sharp knife. But I think she knew that I had sense enough not to do things I shouldn't. And she taught me that and taught me the dangers. But I was blessed to have a family that treated me like one of the family and no different.
Well, you were talking about your sisters having this infection, and you talked about your brother and one that passed away. Were any of your siblings visually impaired from the disease as well, or only you, Ned?
Only me. I drew the straws. I feel like that throughout life I've been the blessed one, and it wasn't bad at all, and I had a lot of support. And of course, I went away to school at six and was taught a lot there of about how to live as a blind person, how to be independent and all that.
Well, let's talk a little bit. You said that your mom didn't treat you any differently, and your siblings, you did pretty much exactly what they did. You just followed along like there was nothing. What about your friends, your classmates at school? Did they treat you any different, or were you just one of the gang?
I was just one of the gang, but I was usually the leader of the gang. That is, I was the one to get us in trouble mostly.
Let's talk a little bit about your education. So you were sighted until you were five, coming up on six. So were you mainstream school, or did you attend a school for the blind?
No, I attended the school for the blind. It was called the Georgia Academy for the Blind in Macon, which is in middle Georgia. Little Richard was from Macon. But anyway, I went away to school when I was 6 years old, had started when I was five at public school when I could see. And because, you could start to school then if you were five before the end of the year. And then the next year I started again in Macon, had to go away from home. It was like 150 miles from Thomasville. And I lived there and was home a weekend in the fall, a weekend in the spring, 2 weeks at Christmas and the summer. So for 12 years, I spent most of my time at school and away from home.
And that leads me to the next question. Tell us, Ned, how you feel attending the School for the Blind impacted your life. And how did that affect you, being that you were such a close-knit family?
Well, it was it wasn't very difficult when I went to school. I can't remember. My mother and someone took me up because we didn't even have, well, we had one vehicle. My daddy had to work, and he had that. And they took me up got me in school and left me there. And I was, the guys that crowded around, they're always, glad to see a new boy. And so they all crowded around and gathered me into the group. And I felt really good about that and went along for 3 or 4 days. And we had a house mother, Mrs. Ray. And so on Friday night that first week, she went to Lanier High School football game there in Macon, and she left a couple of big boys, teenagers, upperclassmen, whatever, to take care of those of us who were under her, 12 and under. And a couple of those guys walked me around, because when I learned she was leaving, I suddenly became very homesick, and I cried and cried and cried for my mom and daddy, my family. And they walked me and walked me around until I hushed. And after that, I don't think I ever bothered again, but I did always love to go home.
So never really attending public school. Do you feel like the School for the Blind is definitely something that you are glad that you attended? Or do you think if the mainstream school would have been offered, that would have been a better fit for you?
Well, I had a little taste of both. Of course, mostly was in the School for the Blind. In the ninth grade, I went home ahead of the demerit committee that might have suspended me, but I went to high school there, and that was a great experience. But no, I feel like the School for the Blind was a good. It was a good thing. There were bad things about it because it kept you separated from the real world, and then when they dump you out in the world at graduation, you're not really equipped for it. However, I was part of my family, and I was always mixed in with my brother and his friends and doing the things they did. And when they rode bicycles, I rode bicycles and all that kind of stuff. I went fishing. I did everything that the others did. And I recall my brother, even when we were small, when I was like maybe 7, he was 9 or so, we'd go out and meet up with his buddies, and they would say to him, "What's wrong with his eyes?" And my brother would say, "He's blind in one and can't see out of the other." You know, just making some comment. And they saw that it didn't make any difference to him, and they didn't make a difference. And I was always included in the games they played. I mean, I did baseball or softball with them, and they would tell me when to swing. And played hide-and-go-seek, and I had to be the one, like they did, to find the others. And they were amazed when I did, but you know, I could hear them start running and hear them breathe and hear them laugh, and I'd know who it was. So I could 1, 2, 3, base on so-and-so. But anyway, I think there's good in both situations. It depends largely, I think, on the individual.
I agree with you there, because some people need a little bit more help than others, and it's harder for some to learn to be independent. So that, I think, was one of the best gifts your mother gave to you, was a start of making you independent, Ned. Tell us, what kind of activities were you involved in school? Were you involved in sports or music, or did you have a hobbies club or some type of club you were involved in while you were in your school years?
Now, you have to remember that when I was in school, it was in the 40s and the 50s, and we didn't have much of anything in the school other than school and, of course, the dormitories. But we didn't have any sports, although we played football among ourselves, and we chose up teams, and we tried to play, tackle and all that kind of stuff, just like a football game, but we had to make adaptations. But we had a field day once a year where we did all kinds of, you know, high jumps and broad jumps and three-legged races and all kind of stuff like that. But we didn't have any real sports activities. We didn't have any clubs, I was a part of the debate team. I enjoyed that, and I was a member of the high school quartet and the glee club, and that was about it.
Well, that's pretty awesome. So what was your favorite thing to debate?
Well, we never had a choice of that. We were always told, and we debated on tariffs and all that kind of stuff, and didn't even know what we're talking about. But we debated just the same.
Well, Ned, in my conversation with you, I understand that you were a very little naughty boy, and that you used to chase all kinds of little girls around. So tell us, we're all dying to know. When did you get your first kiss?
My first kiss, I remember distinctly. Her name was Sarah Goss. I was 14 years old, and it was 1954, maybe something like that. I think I was 14. Anyway, Andy Kenny, who was one of my partners in crime, he and I were together in being the first to receive the newly in use demerit committee. They what in the ninth grade when we came back to school, there were a lot of changes, and we had a physical education director that was brought in that year we'd never had before, and they had instituted the demerit committee, which would sort of measure your conduct. And they had set, they had, if you got 50 demerits, you were eligible for suspension. It wasn't demanded that they suspend you, but they had that privilege. And Andy and I both had 50 pretty quick. I had 85, Andy had 50. I always liked to be champion at everything I did. And so we slipped off the campus, and the girls, it was the girls' day off campus, and we went up the street and met our girlfriends, and we were in this park and standing down on a little bridge over a creek, and I almost missed kissing her because I was so nervous. I just barely brushed her lips and almost fell off the bridge because I was so nervous.
Well, you remember the details. Pretty cool. And so, Ned, in talking about that, and we were talking about you being naughty, so tell us, did you chase the girls or did they chase you?
Well, I think it was a little of both. If they chased me, I still caught them.
Nan, tell us, what is one of the most embarrassing things that you can remember doing trying to impress a girl?
Oh, I don't. I don't remember. I remember one thing that impressed me, but no, this was nothing like trying to impress a girl. But when I was at the University of Georgia, I came out of Park Hall, which was the language building, after my third or fourth visit with my professor on themes that we wrote, and I never got a good grade. And that day, I got a B+ on my theme. And I came out of the door of Park Hall and walked over a little stoop and one step off and across a walkway about 8 feet long and up four or five, six steps. And I went running up those steps. And there was a girl standing at the top of those steps with her nose in a book. And I knocked her off her feet. I was never so embarrassed in all my life.
Well, that brings a whole new meaning to sweeping her off her feet, right?
Exactly.
Now, see, that would even be a greater story if you told us you later married her, but I'm sure that didn't happen.
No, she wasn't even interested in talking to me.
Speaking of marriage, Ned, when did you first marry, and tell us how many children you have? Are you still with us, Ned?
I'm sorry, I went to talking and then pressed the key. Yeah, I was first married in July of 63, July 17th. And I married a lady that had been in school with me at the academy, only she was 7 years older than me, so I didn't know her back then. I knew the name. And later in 63, 62, I met her just after I was out of college. And she lived next door to a cousin of mine in Bainbridge, Georgia, about 40 miles from Thomasville. So I went over, I'd go over and visit with my cousin, and of course visit with Joe. That was her name, Josephine. And after several months, we became very close. And then after a few more months, we got married. And she had then a four-year-old boy, whose name, well, he was three at that point, whose name was Jimmy. And later, after we were married, I adopted him. And we were married 23 years, and she died of congestive heart failure. Later, I met Mona, who is not my present wife. She's my present best friend, though. And we were married for almost 10 years. We got married in 86, September 26th, 86. And she had two girls that were 6 and 9, and the 6 was turning 7 in a couple of months after we got married. So altogether I have 4 children. In 1990, then, also, Jo could not have children. She had had uterine cancer at 24 and had to have a complete hysterectomy. So I married her knowing there was no hope for children, and therefore, you know, I never gave it much thought at all. And then when Mona and I were married, she was 16, well, almost 16 years younger than me. She was 30, I was 46, or turning 46. And she had two girls, and I always said, well, she was young and fertile. So we talked about the possibility of having a child, and we both ruled it out because she said if she knew we'd have a boy, she would say yes. And I said, well, I was thinking I'd probably be about retirement age when our child would graduate from school. So we agreed not to get married. I mean, not to have a child. And so we went along great for 3 years. And then in September of 89, we went to celebrate our third anniversary. And we went and spent the night in Madison, Georgia at the Holiday Inn, because the Georgia Bulldogs stayed there when they were in town every home game. They spent the night there Friday night to keep them together and out of trouble and right with the coach. And they had breakfast there in the cafeteria in the morning, and we got to have breakfast with them. But anyway, that weekend is the weekend when we got more than a football game. A month later, we learned that she was pregnant, and it was such a shock and such a surprise, but what a joy. My biggest joy in life was that whole pregnancy and birth, and I'll never forget one detail of that.
Well, you got me sitting on the edge of my seat. Was it a boy or a girl? And what was the detail?
It was a boy. And in the fourth or fifth month of pregnancy, they said after a sonogram, they said that he had Down syndrome. And Mona went through about 3 weeks of desperate depression. And I was happy. I was thrilled. But, of course, I didn't like the idea of Down syndrome, but I just didn't believe it. And I told her, no, Mona. I said, God has given us this child, and he's given me a child because I never could have had one. I never thought about having one, and I thought I would never have one. And yet here in my late life, when I was 50 years old, I had a child, and it was a boy. But, he is Ned Dawson Benton, Jr. We call him Dawson. And before he was born, a neighbor gave us a card one day that quoted Psalm, I think it's 103 or 107. I get those two mixed up. That said about how God knew David before he was born while he was in his mother's womb. There was something he said about him, beautifully and wonderfully made, that he was beautifully and wonderfully made. And so we decided right then that, you know, that was awesome. So we pegged him as Awesome Dawson before he was born.
Well, that is a fabulous memory to have. And was he born with Down syndrome, Ned, or was he perfect?
Oh, he was perfect. No doubt about it. And we had an experience with that was just so sweet. She went through a second sonogram and an attempted amniocentesis, and the doctor actually attempted 5 times to get fluid and never could. And he sent us to another doctor, another hospital. And before we went there, we had prayed ourselves. We had prayed with our preacher and his wife, and we had prayed with our church. And we went down there on a Friday morning, and the doctor came in. And, well, we went in a room with a technician that did the sonogram. And when she started the sonogram, she started telling me what she was seeing, what was going on. And anyway, she was happy with the sonogram. It looked good. But, of course, you know, we had to wait for the doctor. And the doctor came in, and he, with just one little flick of the needle, had the whatever it is, fluid, and wasn't a problem at all. And he told us that it would be probably a week or 10 days before we'd get the results. But he said he had all ideas that it was all right. And I told Mona he wouldn't have said that if he hadn't have been sure, because he could have been held liable or something. But we came out of that hospital crying for joy. I'm sure people thought somebody died, but no, somebody had lived. That was what was so joyful to us.
Definitely a miracle to be told that your child's going to be born with Down syndrome, and then for him to be born perfect. That's a miracle in itself, and that is just so precious. Ned, thank you for sharing that with us. That is just awesome.
I went to every doctor's appointment with her. I went to the class. Oh, what is that word? Lamaze class with her. And I was her coach, and I was standing there at her side. And when the baby was born, the doctor laid him up on her stomach, and I was at her right side. I put my left hand on her left side, my right hand on her right side, and moved down to the stomach area before I reached over to Dawson, because I didn't want to stick my thumbs in his head and mess him up before he got started. But anyway, and I touched him, and then I ran my hands down his little arms, and those little hands grabbed my thumbs and that grabbed my heart. I would never be the same after that.
That is awesome, Ned. Definitely a gift from God, and you were so blessed, you and your wife both. Thank you for sharing that. Just about brings tears to my eyes. Tell us, how many grandchildren do you have?
I have I have six, and they range in age from 41 to 8.
And needless to say, that's why you pick as Grandpa Ned. Awesome.
Yeah, I got that title right here on the VIP because I talked about Dawson all the time, and I was, you know, to my first grandchild was born in he is 16, so that was 2002, I guess, and I came on here in 2006. But yeah, I was always talking about my grandchildren and my son, and I got that name, Grandpa Ned. Somebody suggested I should use that, and I did.
Let's move on to a little bit different part of your life. Did you attend college or technical school or a skill school, Ned?
I attended the University of Georgia. So I'm truly a bulldog. But I attended 1958 to 62, was 7 quarter hours short of my AB degree. And they were not essential subjects. They were electives that I would have to take. And I ran out of rehab money to go to college and couldn't convince them to send me more. And so I just, I didn't bother to go back. But then after college, I met and married Josephine. And a couple of years later, no, the next year after we were married, I accepted the Lord as my Savior, and my life changed drastically. And 2 years later, I entered Atlanta Christian College in East Point, Georgia, to begin study for the ministry. And I spent 6 years, 5 years in the preaching ministry, 6 years in the preaching ministry. I spent another 5 years in missions work. And the first round of missions work was an audio Christian teaching services, we called it, like Acts, like the book in the Bible, audio Christian teaching services. And it was a service to blind and physically handicapped people to provide audio materials for study. And we had Sunday school lessons. We had Christian magazines that were recorded, used volunteer readers. And I did the editing and all of that. And the recording and the editing and the mailing and everything. It was a joy to do. And then that went on for two and a half years. And then I had opportunity to go to Mexico and teach in a Bible college down in San Luis Potosi, Mexico. And when that opportunity came, I really, really was happy with what I was into, what I was doing. And didn't want to go, and the Lord had to show me. But anyway, I did. A year later, we finally went to Mexico. I had taken 2 quarters of Spanish in the University of Georgia. Loved it. Wanted to be able to speak it. Never had the opportunity. Tried twice in the interim to get back into it, to study it again, and was so busy with my ministry work, I just let it slide. And then finally I'd sent the material back and then got the opportunity to go. And I tell you, 2 of those 3.5 years in Mexico were the happiest years of my life. I loved it. And then I got to a point the Lord was finished with me, and I wouldn't leave. So he stirred the waters, and I finally got the message. But no, I had several things going on that let me know that it was time for me to go home. And it got to a point that the next semester, the only thing I was going to be teaching was English, and that was 2 hours, 2 days a week. And I felt like, we had to raise money from the churches from, you know, all around to pay for the work. And I just felt like I would be staying there wrongfully. I felt like I'd be a thief taking money from people and churches to do a job that I didn't really have to do. And there were two or three other English-speaking people on the staff who could do it. So we went home, and then when I came home, my wife was found to have angina, and our doctor was from Venezuela, and he told her, don't go back to Mexico. And so we thought that was just like the Lord saying no. So that was the end of that. That was 82. And then I went back to piano tuning.
Well, at least the Lord didn't have to let a whale swallow you up like he did Jonah for him to follow his will.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Okay, Ned, speaking about piano, you tune pianos. Tell us a little bit about that part of your career. And if I remember correctly, you also had a career in some type of Christian broadcasting, correct?
Actually, it was just plain old broadcasting. Wasn't Christian because I wasn't. But yes, I did. And at the University of Georgia, I studied radio, TV, journalism, broadcasting, and planned to make my life in radio, having worked 2 summers in 2 stations in my hometown. And I loved radio, always did, always will. So that was what I was going to do with my life. And I didn't know the Lord had other things in mind. But I, after graduation, I spent 3-4 months trying to find a job. And everywhere I went, nobody, again, this was back in 62. And in that period, people didn't think blind people could do much more than cane chairs or sit on the corner with a cup. And so it was very difficult to get a job. I finally found a job because a friend of mine that had gone to school with me at the university and at high school, he was blind. And the lady that was owner and manager of the station where I got hired knew him, and he recommended me to her. So she hired me. But the station had only been on the air 2 weeks. And when I was there 2 weeks, she and her partner got together with the books and found that they were spending a lot more than they were making already. And they decided they had to trim the staff. And of course, being the last one hired and one least likely to double up, as my manager said, they let me go. They said I'd come back when the station got on its feet. But if it got on its feet, it was under somebody else because they sold it just a month or two after that.
Well, again, Ned, being a Christian as you are, that was probably God's will. And sometimes we don't always see it. But tell us a little bit about your piano tuning career.
Well, as I said, when I came back from Mexico, I had always tuned pianos. I never intended to be a piano tuner. I always, you know, I had this grand and noble idea of doing something that maybe no other blind person had done or something. I wasn't going to do a blind man's job. And I say that because piano tuning was quite prevalent among blind people because they taught it in the schools for the blind, and rightly so. It is something that we all could do and a good way to make a living. But that wasn't what I was going to do. And But I always tuned pianos since 1957. And, I always did some tuning. And everywhere I went, people would learn I tuned, and I'd always have it to do. And even during my 6 years in the ministry, I still tuned pianos a few times, you know, off and on, because people would learn I did that and ask me to do that. But anyway, so when I came back from Mexico, I had nowhere to go and nothing to do. And the Christian church, I'm ordained in the Christian church, is an independent church, and they didn't move their preachers or provide, you know, I mean, you didn't get hired by a church unless somebody recommended you or you were looking, and you'd have to find your own job. Anyway, so when I came back, I said to people, because I love to eat, you know, I went back to piano tuning, and I've been doing that full time ever since. And, I love it, and I'm proud to be a piano tuner, and I thank the Lord for it, for the ability to do it, and for the opportunity. And it has become a real ministry to me, because I meet and have met hundreds and thousands of people over the 50 years or so that I've been tuning, and I've been able to be there in some very trying times for families. I've been able to pray with them. I've been able to stand by with them when they had loved ones that were sick or loved ones that died. And just been a real blessing. And I'm so thrilled that that I have had the opportunity to do that. Now that I'm about to finish my career, I want to toot my own horn, because Confucius says, "He who tooteth not his own horn, the same shall not be tooted." But anyway, I've been tuning Elton John's piano for about 6 years now. And I tuned it, must have been about three times before I ever knew it was his. And I tuned it most recently, Friday was 2 weeks ago, I believe. And he came to town about a week ago for his last concert in Atlanta.
That is awesome, Ned. And you stole my next question, which was to tell us about the famous person you tuned the piano. And that's pretty, there's a story there about how you found out it was Elton John's piano. And it was very interesting to me. So I want you to share that with everyone. But Ned, as you said, it's truly a gift, because not everyone can, even though it's taught in the School for the Blind, not everyone has the ear for tuning pianos, and that is truly a gift from God. And to make a career out of it and to be able to witness and be there for people in the ministry, you have truly been blessed. But share with us quickly the story of how you found out you were tuning Elton John's piano.
Well, I advertised in a Catholic paper. I tuned a piano for a Catholic church here in Lawrenceville back in 1992, and the lady said to me, do you advertise in the bulletin? And I said, no, what is the bulletin? And she told me it was a Catholic publication that was sent into every home in this particular diocese, which covered from Rome, Georgia to Columbus, Georgia, which is a good portion of Georgia. And it went into over, at that time, over 40,000 homes, I think they said, or maybe it was even more than that. But so I got into that, and I advertised on that up until about maybe 4 or 5 years ago. Best advertising I ever did, because I think the Catholic people thought if you were in that bulletin that you were good, you could be trusted. And a lot of people advertise in there. But anyway, they saw my name. I say they. Lucy and Erica, mother and daughter, are house managers for Elton, and they've been with him for years, and they're Hispanic. They're from Guatemala, and Lucy called me to tune her piano, or to tune a piano, and I went and tuned her piano, and I tuned it another couple times, and then I got a call from Erica one day. I was on the road, and she called and said, "Mr. Benton, we want you to come and tune Elton's piano, Elton John's piano." And I said, "Oh, well, let me get the information." And so she gave me the address and phone number and stuff. And I told my driver that sounded very familiar. So when I got home, I looked into my computer in my database, and sure enough, that was Lucy was at that same address. Now, this is a big high-rise condo place where he lives, and he owns the entire 36th floor. So we went, and I called Lucy, and I said, "Look, I'm going to be down there tuning Elton John's piano, and I thought since you're in the same area, I could tune yours while I was there." And she sort of, you know, just didn't say anything for a few seconds, and she acted like, you know, "What are you talking about?" And then she told me, "Oh," she said, "this is Elton John's piano." So I thought, well, then no need to fear tuning his piano. I told my driver I was so happy to know that I had already been tuning his piano and there had been no complaints, because I would be afraid if I went and he started trying to tell me how to tune pianos, I would tell him, "Look, I'll tune the pianos, you know, you play and sing."
Thank you, Ned, for sharing that with us. And I just looked at the time. Wow, time gets away from us, but got a few more things we want to cover here. So it's going to run over a little bit, guys and gals, but I want to cover a few more things here and then we'll open the floor. Ned, want you to share with us who played the most prominent role in who you are today. You have very strong views about this, and you want to share this with us. So tell us who made Ned, who played that role in your life.
Well, it's like, you know, you say something to children about, about the Bible and Bible stories. And usually you ask them a question and they'll give you the answer, "God and Jesus." And I'd have to say it was my mother and Jesus. But my mother, as I was saying earlier, you know, my mother was not an educated woman. That's not to say she wasn't wise, because she definitely was a wise, wise woman. But she, like I said, when I lost my sight, it never changed anything in our relationship, and she never changed, and she never made any big deal of my being blind. And like I said, she taught me to work in the kitchen, eventually helped me to learn to cook. She had me keep house, you know, sweep and clean and all, just like the rest of them. I had to dry dishes when my brother washed, and then when he got older, I moved up to the washer position, and Sarah, my older sister, moved into the dryer position, and we had to do that. And I just always had my work to do, just like they did. And she would have me sweep the floors, because she said I got them cleaner than my siblings did. Because I'd have my shoes off, and she'd tell people, "Well, as long as he can feel dirt, he'll sweep." So that was good. But she also let me iron, because I like to get into those things, and all my sisters would all be ironing, and so I ironed too. But again, she was wise. She let me iron only pillowcases and towels, so, you know, I wasn't apt to hurt anything much. But she always, she never said to me that you can't do that. And she would let me try anything short of killing myself. But, you know, I rode bicycle. Well, I started out with a tricycle. Before that, we had a little red wagon. And I'd get pushed around in that and do the guiding. And they would give me some directions. But then I rode a tricycle and a tri-bike, which was the three-wheel tricycle, big one with a chain, and then the bicycle, just like the others. And I played softball with them and played hide-and-go-seek, all of that. And And she would never say, you can't do that. And I remember one day we were riding a bicycle and we went up the street and around the corner, two blocks up that street and back. Coming down my street, we were flying down the street, and I was riding solo. Just they were accompanying me, but I was riding solo, and came flying down the street. And in front of the house was a big oak tree that I couldn't even reach around on either corner of the house, out from the house at the street. So I came flying down the street, and inside those trees just in front of the house, and I ran up the second tree on the bicycle, threw me over the handlebars, and I scraped half the bark off the tree, I think, and fell on the handlebars as I fell. And my mother came running out of the house, and she stood on the porch, and she patiently waited till I caught my breath, and she said, are you all right? And I said, yeah, I think so, you know. And so she went on back in the house because she knew that I wasn't hurt enough to need any attention. And she let me go. But she was always like that. When I was grown and had a family, I was talking with her one day, and I said, Mama, were you really that smart, that wise, that you let me do all of that? Or was that just ignorance? And she said, I don't know, Ned. She said, I just figured if you couldn't do it, you'd find out.
Well, that is awesome, Ned, because so many parents want to coddle their children when they have a type of disability or a visual impairment. So she was very wise in to let you be independent and learn your way. Ned, if you could go anywhere in the world, it's unlimited, where would you go and why?
I think I would probably go to Israel, just because it's God's country. Because, you know, it's been such a part of my history, learning and studying in the Bible and having come up being taught in the scriptures, and it being the place where Jesus lived, where he was born, where he walked and ministered. And it would just be something to be in that environment. And I've never had opportunity to go anywhere outside the country other than Mexico. But that, I think, if I could only choose one place, I would probably choose Israel.
That would be an awesome choice. Ned, if you could only have one meal, it was your last meal, what would that be?
A lot of it. I don't know. I like everything. My motto is I'll eat anything that doesn't eat me first. So I'm not sure that on any given day I would choose the same thing. But I just love to have a good plate of food.
Can't argue with that. So I understand you play the piano as well as tune. So tell us who your favorite pianist is and why.
Well, he was more than a piano player. He was a singer also. But I have always idolized Ray Charles. And, you know, I never saw him in concert, never had opportunity to meet him. But I wish I had been able to grab hands with him and hope it would rub off on me.
All right, Ned, tell us. Your faith is very, very strong. It is very evident from the get-go of the beginning of this interview to we are finally down to the closing. Talk a little bit about your faith before the final question, before I open the floor.
Oh, Teresa, I would be nothing and could not live if I didn't have faith, because the Lord has been such a part of my life. I accepted the Lord, as I said, in 1963, And that was 54 years ago. And I've had 54 years with the Lord. I don't know how he stood it, but it's been a blessing to me. I've learned so much through the years, and I can look back and see how much different I am now than even when I first became a Christian. I have learned so much about the love of the Lord and the fellowship of the church, which I never knew before. And though I preached for 6 years, I thought I knew everything. And I was a really gung-ho Christian. I wanted to go after everybody. And like so many others, I wanted to beat people over the head with the Bible, you know. And so many times I wanted to, I think, impress people with what I knew. And it took me a while and a lot of dealings with me by the Lord to change me. But I came to know that it's not about a matter of rules. It's not measuring what you've done and what you haven't done. We aren't getting graded on our activities, but it's about the love of the Lord, our love for him, our love for the church, and about loving people, and about being interested in people for the Lord's sake. I know I was such a hard head and such a judge in my early ministry, and that's gone. That's gone. I know that I know nothing, and I know that God has not sent me to convert the world. He sent me to the world to show them the love of Jesus and tell them how much he loved them and loved them enough to die for them and make it possible for them to have eternal life. I can't say enough about it. But there's nothing I do that I don't do with the knowledge that the Lord is with me, and I consider him in all I do.
Well, amen, Ned. I mean, I've been dealing with some throat cancers and stuff, and the Lord has definitely been with you, and we continue to pray for his healing and all for you. And thank you for sharing your life with us. My final question, and then we're going to open the floor to the members. How long have you been part of VIP Conduit, and how has it impacted your life?
I think, if I remember correctly, that I came on this site on May 7th, 2006. It may have been May 5th or something, but I think May 7th might have been when I first signed up. I wasn't here but a couple of days, and I knew I'd found a home. And I have loved it. It really has made a big difference in my life. I've had some great times here, and right after I joined, there was quite a move to get the board to give us a Christian music room, and we had some, you know, there were some people that complained when we played some Christian music in the music rooms mixed in with everything else. You don't get that nowadays, but there was some of that, and so people pushed for a room, and the board gave us the Gospel Sounds room. Well, I started hanging out in there, and others started hanging out, and before you know it, we had a good group getting together. We were playing all kind of Christian music, both contemporary and gospel and everything. And we had a lot of chatting going on. And we had, one day there was a lady that came in, and she was all discouraged, and we talked about it, and then we prayed about it, and that started something. And then for 5 solid years, I don't think I ever missed a night in the Gospel Sounds room, and everybody got to a point, they thought of it as my room and sort of looked to me to be the master of ceremonies or whatever. But it wasn't. It was our room, and we had some great times in there. And we prayed together many, many times, and we played a lot of music and did a lot of encouraging of people. And it really drew me close to a lot of people.
Well, Ned, we're glad that you are here on VIP and glad that it is a big part of your life. And I want to thank you so much for agreeing to be the VIP of the month of September for the VIP Spotlight. This interview has been absolutely touching, eye-opening, and has been remarkable. Your life has been remarkable. And we're going to open the floor to a few questions. I know we're running over, but I know that there are probably some that want to ask questions, Ned. So if you'll key up and ask a question one at a time and give Ned time to answer the question, please. Okay, who has the first question?
Nick Joel is away.
Oh, I have a comment.
All right, Terry?
Ned, I want to tell you that this interview is fantastic. Learn a lot about you, and what a witness you are. Man, fantastic. And the story about your son, it just gave me the chills. And I tell you, it's a pleasure to have you a member of VIP. I've always enjoyed talking to you, and I'm glad you're here with us.
Thank you, Terry. And I'm glad you're a part of VIP too, because you've been a continuous partner here on the site, and we appreciate all you do.
Anyone else have a question for Ned?
I'd like to say also that this has been a wonderful spotlight, and Ned, you're just the great person to have on under the spotlight, because what a story you do have to tell. I've known Ned for a very long time, and I just cherish his friendship, and I've learned a lot. I didn't hear you mention tonight about the music that you and your second wife, I think, did quite a bit of music together, and I was wondering if you'd like to touch on that a little bit.
Well, yeah, we used to sing gospel music, and when we were married, she was a Christian and I was not, and she was had been into gospel music for some time, and I wasn't. I didn't even like gospel music, didn't care much for hymns, felt guilty about it, but didn't care much for hymns. And but she was patient with me, and after accepting the Lord and becoming a part of the church, I began to play, and she would sing, and I play for her. And I wasn't playing very well, but I did it a lot because of her singing. And then finally she conned me into singing with her, and because I wasn't doing it by myself, I wasn't too shy, and so I started singing with her. And then when we came to Atlanta Christian College, I got hooked up with a church that needed a piano player. And I was such a new Christian that I didn't dare say no when they asked me, because I thought, well, maybe that's what the Lord wanted me to do. But anyway, I became the pianist, and it was a baptism of fire, I'm telling you, because I played that Wednesday night. And a week later, they started a two-week revival meeting for which I played. And I was just, we took a hymn book home because I didn't even know the hymns. And Joe would read me the words, and she would sing them to me. And I'd try to get the melody fixed in my mind. And I didn't have a piano to practice on because mine was stored somewhere. We didn't have a place to put it. And I think twice in that 2 weeks, I got a chance to go over to a neighbor's house and practice a little on their piano. But I'd go to church, and they would say, all right, everybody turn to number 321. Let's sing all four stanzas of Love Lifted Me. And I would just do a bring a chord, and you know, B flat chord. It was in the key of B flat. And the singer would start the song, and I'd just sort of fall in behind him. And about halfway through, I'd get it, you know, and then start playing pretty good. And that's the way I learned, and it was crazy. One Sunday we sang either Marching to Zion or forget the other song, but they were exactly the same music in the verse, but the choruses were different. And so when I came to the chorus, the song leader, who was not a trained guy, knew something was wrong. He didn't know what, and he muddled through it. So did I. And then when service was over, my wife and my son said, what happened to you up there? And they told me what I'd done. That was really funny. But we did sing a lot, and we were quite well known in the churches, and they had us for weekend mission rallies, for revival meetings, because in doing so they had a preacher and special music and a piano player.
Another awesome. That was one of the questions I didn't hit on because we're running over so much. Thank you, Becky. Anybody else have a question for Ned?
I've got a comment I'd like to make, Teresa.
Go right ahead, Parker.
Ned, I think I speak for all of us when we say that we're very, very happy that you found VIP Conduit, and you have definitely had a very positive impact on the site, and hope you'll continue.
Well, thank you, Parker, and I'm thankful I found it too.
Anybody else have a question?
I got a comment.
Go right ahead, Kevin.
What was it? I met Ned not too long ago, you know, when I come back on the site, and I've really enjoyed him. He's been a good man, and I really do appreciate him.
Yes, we really enjoy Grandpa Ned. Anybody else have a question?
I have a question, Miss Janice.
Go right ahead, Miss Janice.
Ned, do you read Braille music?
Janice, I did. I do. I don't know that I would know what I was reading now. I haven't done anything in so long. I don't think I've learned a piece of music from Braille in the last 40 years. I went to it when I first started playing for the church and playing for my wife to sing, and went to it and learned a couple of things. But I do read Braille music, but it's been a long time.
Well, I admire you for that, and I admire you in so many other ways as well. But I'd like to say that you then must play by ear, and if you do, we're so thankful for our gifts, aren't we? And we love you, Ned.
Yeah, Janice, I've known Janice for about as long as I've known Vip, and she's always been the pick of the litter for me. She got such a sweet voice. I love her accent. I call her Miss Mississippi. And I just love to hear you sing, you and your sister, and y'all do so good together and separately. But you definitely have a gift, Janice. And I don't know that I have talent. I have to work hard to do well, but I thank the Lord for what He's done with me, because when I quit after 7.5 years of piano lessons, I could not play.
Well, God definitely gave you a gift. Anyone else? Final question. Anyone else?
Ned, I didn't get to hear the whole thing because I was doing a training and got back late, but what I did hear, I thoroughly enjoy, and you're such a wonderful witness for Christ and just humanity in general. You know, you're just a great guy, and I'm honored to call you friend.
Ned, it's John from Nova Scotia here. I'm proud to know you. I haven't known you as long as you've been on VIP. I come on a few years later, and I remember the gospel room and the music in it. And I'm also proud to know you from another website that we're on together.
Teresa Rose, I'd like to say something to Ned, put in my 2 cents.
All right, Miss Lydia, go ahead.
Transmitting.
Ned, we go back as far as, I guess, when we were in the gospel room. Ned has helped me a lot of times when I first met him and went in the gospel room and we were playing music and I was depressed a lot at that time. And he really helped me with talking to me, playing music.
Well, the one thing in life that I love doing, and I think it is my gift, is to encourage people. And I want people to believe they can do, because, you know, with the help of the Lord, we can do anything. And there are no mountains too high, no valleys too deep. We can make the journey if he's our partner.
Yeah, I had lost my key, but lost my train of thought. I want to say everything all in like a minute, but I'm proud to say that Ned is one of my good friends on here. And like I say, we played on RS Games, where I find him everywhere, and he's a great guy. And he makes VIP very important, as well as Terry and Barry and Parker and Becky and Mar and everybody else. But I just had to say that how I appreciate knowing him, and he is a great guy. And I love you, Ned. Always will. And I guess that's it for now.
Thank you, Liz.
I'd like to make a comment. This has been a very, very interesting interview. And Ned, we all love you, and you're a great person.
Tom Kent here. I just want to jump in right quick and say it's always an honor when we see Ned come into the Real Country event and some of the different things. He comes in, plays bingo with us sometimes, and it's just always good when Ned comes around. We know that he's one of the good guys, so enjoy listening to the interview. And Becky, if you're still back there, I want you to know that I ate just a couple extra bites of spaghetti just for you. So there you go.
All right. Anybody else have any last comments?
Thanks to you, Teresa Rose, as well. You always do such a wonderful job with this event, and thanks so much for deciding to do it and just giving us a glimpse into each other's lives. It's a real treat.
It's been a super interview, Teresa Rose. We love you, Ned.
Yeah, Teresa, you do an excellent job, and we definitely do appreciate you. You have all the right answers and the right questions, actually, but you do a fantastic job.
Transmitting.
Yeah, Teresa Rose, you just have that, I don't know, that you should be a host on TV. You're really good, and you have that sweet voice that just everyone, when you talk, we listen. I enjoy your voice, I enjoy your questions, and this was a great event with Ned. I guess he's one of my best friends, and that's why it just hit me. I'm glad I was here, and you did a great job, and you do a great job. So thank you.
Okay, come on, Teresa. We're all dying to know who's going to be next month.
Thank you, everybody. I enjoyed doing this, and it was my pleasure, Ned, to have the honor to interview you and to be able to speak to you before the interview to share some things with you, and your faith being so strong is just wonderful, and you were definitely a witness to me, and I appreciate you so much. Okay, everybody, here we go. The VIP of the month of October will be our own Bernadette Mooney from Canada. So everybody, put on your calendars, October the 29th, 7 p.m. Eastern, Village Square. VIP of the month of October is Miss Bernie. So when you see her, congratulate her and make her feel welcome and come out and support the interview. Again, I want to thank everyone for coming. And I've got a little something here for you, Ned, before we close out this evening.
It's a little bit funny, this feeling inside. I'm not one of those who can easily hide. I don't have much money, but boy, if I did, I'd buy a big house where we both could live. If I was a sculptor, but then again, no, or a man who makes potions in a traveling show. I know it's not much, but it's the best I can do. My gift is my song, and this one's for you. And you can tell everybody this is your song. It may be quite simple, but now that it's done, I hope you don't mind, I hope you don't mind that I put down in the words how wonderful life is while you're in the world. Top the moss, well, a few of the verses, well, they've got me quite cross. But the sun's been quite kind while I wrote this song. It's for people like you that keep it turned on. So excuse me for getting, but these things I do, you see, I've forgotten if they're green or they're blue. Anyway, the thing is, what I really mean, yours are the sweetest eyes I've ever seen. You can tell everybody this is the song. It may be quite simple, but now that it's done, I hope you don't mind, I hope you don't mind that I put down in the words how wonderful life is while you're in. I hope you don't mind, I hope you don't mind that I put down in the words how wonderful. while you're in the world.
God bless everybody. Thank you, Ned, and good night.
This has been a presentation of VIP Conduit.